You're listening to The Cult, presented by Hybrid Marketing Co. In each episode, we explore the dynamics of this rapidly growing sector with our host, Jen Lamboy, along with expert guests. She'll delve into the complex interplay between cannabis business, culture, and marketing, equipping you with insights to amplify business outcomes in this rapidly evolving space. Now, let's start the show.
I've been seeing more and more headlines on security or lack thereof in cannabis, especially where dispensaries are getting shut down. I'm thinking about Cookies in Maryland, Daylight Cannabis in New Jersey. I'm sure there are many more. And I should probably add that Cookies also had that video ad that didn't help, showing a large smoke gun blowing medical marijuana into the mouths of people outside of the dispensary, but that's probably another show. But I wanted to dig in a bit more on this topic, the topic of security. So I invited Tony Gallo to school us. If you don't already know him, he was recently recognized as one of High Times magazine's 100 most influential cannabis people. He's also known as the OG of cannabis security, having worked with more than 600 clients in 35 states in Canada. You may have seen him if you're attending cannabis expos and trade shows. He's spoken at more than 100 of those. He's also the managing partner at Sapphire Risk Advisory Group out of Texas, my hometown. But I should be careful when I say that. Sometimes people throw back at me, but I think I'm in safe company here. So thank you, Tony. I'm really, really, really excited to chat with you.
Thank you for having me on. I look forward to it.
Awesome. So I'm curious, like in the space of retail, is it just that laws are unclear, or are there folks that are just really new to this particular industry? How are people stepping in these giant piles of dog do?
I think if you look at this industry and you realize that it's a retail-based industry, and I've been in the retail security field over 25 years, worked for large companies like Sears and Macy's, and then worked for smaller chains, what you would see is that there is a group of individuals, and some of them even at large MSOs, that fully don't understand how to run a retail business. And I think that's what gets them in trouble. A lot of the break-ins or security issues, such as break-ins and robberies and things that I see, in other industries that have been around longer, they've learned and taken some steps that probably could have, if not prevented it from happening, at least reduced the likelihood of it happening. So that's one of the things I've been in the cannabis industry now 10 years, and what I've seen over those 10 years continues to happen, and that is not a full understanding of how to run a retail business.
Mm-hmm. So in retail, I'm thinking more along the lines of loss prevention. I'm wondering too, from the state's perspective, if they're looking at this a matter of public safety, and so are the laws in retail shops different when it comes to cannabis?
Well, the laws are different. What you're seeing in the cannabis industry when states and cities are involved is a very big focus on how to mitigate any problems occurring outside of the retail dispensary or grow facility. Very focused on how the city doesn't want to be in the newspaper, or how they don't want to have to add additional police officers, or how they're going to prevent the cannabis product from winding up at the playground or at the school. So there's a very big focus when it comes to city and state regs on the exterior part of the business, more so than the interior part, which is where the majority of the losses are occurring. And the state and the city kind of feel that's not really their problem. If you're not able to run your business properly, then you won't have good margins and then you should close. And that's what we see a lot in Colorado, Oregon, Washington, and California now, is companies that have been up and running for 5 years or so are contacting us because their margins are just not there anymore. They're just, or they never were there, and they're just not making the money they thought they were, and they're trying to understand why is that going on.
Mm-hmm. And so how often is it a case of security kind of having a hand in that loss?
Well, if you look at, you know, statistically, retail security in the cannabis industry, about 80 to 85% of all the losses are internal. Mm-hmm. So, you know, statistically, armed robberies and break-ins are much lower than any other high-risk retail business. So take, when we say high-risk retail businesses, you know, that's the area that we service. We don't just service cannabis. And that would be liquor stores, convenience stores, firearm stores, tobacco, alcohol, basically any location that has a high amount of cash and a very desirable piece of merchandise, such as tobacco, liquor, lottery tickets, cannabis, you know. So a lot of times when these losses are occurring, a lot of individuals initially respond to, oh, you know, I'm going to protect the outside of my building. Meanwhile, the inside is really where their losses are occurring.
So within the retail space, that makes a lot of sense. Are you all also working with folks in on the cultivation side, kind of developing, you know, planning for security planning?
Yeah, so we do a lot of cultivation facilities. The largest one we ever did was a 450,000 square foot facility in Nevada, 105,000 plants. We do micro grows in Illinois. We do 30 to 50,000 dollar grow facilities. Now, in that environment, I would say over 90% of the losses are internal and not external. And primarily, the biggest spot that we've seen the biggest exposure is in the trim rooms.
Got it. Sure, that makes sense. I think that makes a lot of sense. Well, I think back to I came from the seed genetics world, and we had the organization that I worked for. The farm was out of North Carolina, and I remember some very colorful stories of security issues, breaches, measures. And I thought, you know, this is it's such a different world when you step into the cannabis space. There's the internal conversation within the industry, and then there's the consumer perception, I think. And so when you think about like armed guards on a farm, I mean, I can't imagine there's any other crop being grown or, you know, even with indoor cultivation where that has been the case.
I would say, you know, there are usually guards at some, at manufacturing facilities, but I get the point that you're saying, and I agree. And I think that's a perception thing by this, you know, we do a lot of city council meetings. We probably do one to two every week nationwide where we meet with city council officials or present at city council meetings. And there's a big misunderstanding about the product, about cannabis. And, you know, to the extent where I've had city council people asking, how do we pick up the needles in the parking lot outside the dispensary, to, you know, feeling that the smoke that comes out or the odor that comes out of the grow facility is going to get everybody in the neighborhood high or things of that nature. There's a lot of misunderstanding. And I think over time that education will come about. But, you know, and I think that's one of the reasons why, you know, the product is much more secure than any other retail, high risk retail business I deal with. I mean, the amount of security that's required in a dispensary compared to a jewelry store is vast.
Sure. Well, yeah, I'm thinking too, you know, I kind of mentioned sort of that difference between someone who knows or coming from an industry where they kind of know the rules of, well, you know, tips and tricks, regulations and compliance around loss prevention, for example, at a jewelry store. Then you've got cannabis, which is kind of up and coming. You mentioned some of the mature states who are, you know, working through things maybe in a different way than some of the emerging states who are just now drafting their laws around this, I'm assuming. And I mentioned in the beginning of our conversation, daylight cannabis. So in the Mount Laurel township in New Jersey, I believe that was the first organization to be awarded a license. And I don't know if folks, listeners know the story yet or even how that's evolved, but they really were highlighted and profiled, and you were included in some of that content too around before doors even opening, they may have a significant cost that they're facing in order to mitigate some of their security shortcomings.
Well, yeah. I mean, one of the things that you see, and it's becoming more and more prominent, is the value of security. I think when you look at the states and the cannabis industry, as everyone knows, grew from the West going East, the level of security required in New Jersey or in New York or Massachusetts is vastly higher than what the level of security would be involved in Colorado and Oregon and Washington. And I think what happened was the state saw what was going on. And as the state started to mature, they learned some of these deficiencies that they saw in security and added that into their requirements. And then you see the cities then, where the majority of the licenses before they're issued has to be blessed by the city. You know, that's a requirement in almost every state now, where a city resolution or city approval comes in. And a lot of the cities are trying to learn what kind of level of security they need, and they get concerned about that. And like I said, we do these city council presentations, and probably 60 to 70% of the time I talk to the chief of police, he's asking for something that's not in the regs and not also in the state requirements, but he would like to have that. We just had a chief ask me to put the address of the building in 3-foot letters on the roof, so if a helicopter flew overhead, they would see the address of that building. Well, it's not in any kind of city regs or state regs, but it's what the chief wanted. And we were able to oblige that, and in turn helped, you know, worked with the community, worked with the state, the city, and was able to part of that be to get the license. And that's why I think we were successful in that town.
Mm-hmm. Is there a almost like a checklist that you kind of share among states? I imagine that states are borrowing insights across state lines as they're starting to formulate their own specific regulations. It sounds like you're also helping to guide.
Yeah, so we do a lot of we do have a checklist. We do a lot of on-site risk assessments. Well, we'll come out and we'll look at the security. We do more in established companies, ones that have been open for 1 to 3 years, than we do in the new locations, because you know we will use that checklist. But we do sit down a lot and with city officials or even at state level and discuss best practices. What kind of safe to use? You know, that became very apparent during the riots that occurred a few years ago of a lot of the Western states using the wrong kind of safe. What kind of camera coverage should be needed? What kind of additional training of the employees? You know, it's amazing how many cannabis locations, whether it's a cultivation or a dispensary, where they'll actually have some policies and procedures, SOPs, that may have been written by a law firm or even a security company, but they never actually communicated that to their employees. So you wrote an SOP about what to do if there was a robbery, or what to do if someone had a heart attack, or what to do if there was a fire, but you never trained your employees on that.
Mm-hmm. Well, what are the, is it because do they feel the likelihood of a robbery is not going to happen, or it's just they did it to kind of check off that box?
Well, I think it was initially to check off the box, but I think a lot of it goes back to that core comment that I made, is a lot of owners have never done this before. This is, you know, in this industry, it's a very new industry. You can make an argument and say the industry is no older than 15 years old, and you can maybe 20, but you can't say it's 50 years old, because it isn't. And I think a lot of people just don't understand the industry. If you were going to open up a jewelry store or a liquor store, you would understand what the best practices of that industry is, and then you would want to put that into your business when you open. Well, it's such a young industry. A lot of individuals, a lot of business owners open with not a clear understanding of profit margins and how to make money and where your losses are occurring from and how to go about, you know, they feel that they can put cannabis out on the shelf and people are just going to come and they're going to make, you know, millions of dollars.
Yep. We often see that story, especially we work with folks in emerging markets who have, of course, the anticipated basket sizes and foot traffic in the door. Those numbers are much more inflated than in a mature state like in Colorado. But we're finding that, you know, when we talk to prospects or folks that we're working with in emerging markets and they think, hey, I think my single store retail shop is going to bring in anywhere between $12 and $18 million in the first year, are, you know, and when we first had those conversations, I remember my jaw specifically dropping, thinking, wow, there's, you know, this is a new day, or this is a really giant pipe dream. I'm not sure. But kind of along the same lines of what you're saying, there's, you know, where folks are still kind of navigating to see what's going to happen next.
Yep.
I'm curious. I keep thinking about, I wondered if your phone rang anymore when Tulsa King came out. Do you ever watch that show with Sylvester Stallone? If you don't know it, what is he? He gets out of prison. He's in the mob. He has no, you know, the mob's not going to help him out anymore. And so he has to find quick access to cash. So he finds himself in a dispensary.
It's interesting because I was born in Brooklyn, New York, grew up in the New York City area, New Jersey area, and last name is Gallo. So, you know, obviously I got a lot of ribbing about, you know, and now I live in Texas. So I got a lot of ribbing that it's so similar to the Tulsa King mentality there.
Yeah, you know, I watched a few episodes. I just thought, you know, to me, it seems, of course, pretty Hollywood and unreal. But I wondered if is that putting any more phone calls coming your way?
Well, you look at and then you look at the state of Oklahoma, which probably has the worst security model in the industry. So there was a lot of similarities there.
Who's then, speaking of Oklahoma, maybe not doing it well, who's doing it right when it comes to some of these best practices too and laws?
I think that the East Coast has a pretty good understanding. I like the New Jersey, the Pennsylvania model. Massachusetts has a really good model when it comes to security. Maryland has a good model when it comes to security. Even California, most of the cities now adopted a lot of what they learned on the East Coast. And you know, Illinois has a good model. And I think a lot of those security policies and procedures and regulations that came into play was because those states actually learn from the startups, the Colorados and the Oregons and the Washingtons, and benefited from that kind of information.
Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense. I don't think it always necessarily translates over. Like, we're, you know, when you think about outside of the world of security, some things each state almost has its own culture, not necessarily even political culture, but, you know, how the state wants cannabis to really show up and in their particular areas kind of varies, I think. But I would, yeah, like you're saying, I imagine there's a lot to learn from mature markets for those who are just opening shop. As far as cannabis security, I feel like there's not, you know, in our almost internal circle, it's not one of those things that comes up often, but especially on the consumer side. But do you feel like on the consumer side that is a consideration that they're thinking, is something that they're thinking about when they're heading into dispensaries?
I believe so. I believe, like any other retail environment, you know, put yourself in a position. Let's say you want to go to a dispensary, and it doesn't have to be a dispensary. It could be a jewelry store. It could be a pawn shop. It could be a music store. You pull up into that parking lot, and there's graffiti on the wall, and there's dirt on the ground, and there's the lighting's not adequate. You know, you may give another thought about, well, do I want to go back there again? You know, maybe there's another location that I would feel more comfortable going to. And, you know, I see that a lot. And that goes back to the not understanding the retail of, you know, and not understanding, you know, how that goes hand in hand with that peace of mind and that security. I talk to people sometimes and they feel, oh, I'm going to put four armed guards with, you know, SWAT gear outside the store. And I'm, and I, you know, my answer to that, and it could even be, you know, not even in cannabis, is would you want your wife or your girlfriend or your daughter to go there if you have to have that much security outside your store? I don't find that safe. I find that intimidating, and I would go somewhere else. You know, a lot of times people say, oh, well, you have to be buzzed in and buzzed out. I said, well, you know, is that the right decision to do? You know, is that, again, or what kind of message do you want to send? And I think a lot of cannabis people don't understand that. They send the wrong message. They don't feel they're a retail business. A lot of misconceptions initially was I can open up my location and people are going to climb a mountain, come here to buy, you know, the cannabis. And now there's competition. And now there's other people that do it better. We just don't, you know, we just help with a design in Manhattan. It was gorgeous. We did Gotham downtown in Manhattan, and we did Union Travel. And you know, these are beautiful locations to walk into. They're not the old mom and pa Cheech and Chong pot shops.
I'm laughing because I was just in New York recently, and stepped into some of those illicit shops. And then even, I remember one of them, I just wanted to check them out. I had lots of questions. And as I was waiting for my Uber to then take me to a little, you know, I was going to head up to another one. I saw numerous people peek their heads into the door, into the store, and then not go in. And I thought, what is it that is, well, maybe they weren't repulsed. I don't know what the right word is, but they were not encouraged and enticed to come in the door. And I wondered if, because some of those spots look a little sketch.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I keep harping on the same word retail, but think about it. Would you go into a jewelry store or a clothing store or somewhere that you just didn't feel comfortable? You didn't, you know, it was sketchy to go in, you know, the store was dark, or the, you know, the there were people outside that you didn't feel comfortable with, you know, and that's why, you know, a lot of times the business isn't successful.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the strangest things you've seen? Because I imagine you guys go through, take an audit maybe for existing organizations too. Are there just like any weird things that you guys have spotted?
Well, we do a lot of on-site risk assessments. So a lot of the strange things I find in the Western states, more so, you know, because the Eastern states are fairly new. But we'll go into locations and they can't understand why they're losing cannabis and the bathroom window opens to the alleyway. Or we'll come into a location and everyone knows the combination to the safe and they don't understand why they're losing cash, or they've had five robberies and you can see clearly that, you know, they are communicating to people to come rob their store, and, you know, and wear things like that. I mentioned the cultivation, the best store I have. And, you know, and this happens actually more. The story I'm telling now, I've had this happen at least a half a dozen ways in a different way, but we had a bud tender who was trimming the buds in the trim room, as everyone would know. And he had the latex gloves. He would palm a bud. He put it in his glove. He'd pull his latex glove off. He'd throw it in the trash. And he would do that a couple times throughout the day. And he really didn't care who took out the trash. He didn't take out the trash. But they had such a bad trash waste disposal program that at 2 o'clock in the morning, he'd just come back and grab all the black bags that had cannabis in it, you know. And this went on for well over a year before they identified, you know, where those losses are. And and that's really what I'm seeing a value, like I said, you know, in those Western states now, is a lot of people are going, I just don't understand why I'm not as profitable. My sales really haven't gone down that much, or if they haven't, they've even increased, but I'm just not making the money I thought I should be making.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Well, that goes to also, you know, when we're looking at more and more, especially as a cannabis marketing agency who's working with retailers who are opening shops and kind of catching them on the front end when it comes to not only bud tender engagement and training, but building out their org chart. talking about hiring processes, building relationships with the team so that they're also building a little bit of longevity and loyalty to their organizations, not only in service to loss prevention, but, you know, right now we're seeing, of course, and this is post-COVID, in many industries, the desire to work maybe being less and less, desire to, you know, loyalty to organizations also decreasing as well. So, you know, to your point, if you're, you know, we're talking about in-house and internal loss, theft, loss of cash and product, you know, I wonder how much of having a really tighter internal force within the workplace, if that really helps as well.
We have a program we call Culture of Honesty, and that's what we're trying to develop with our clients, is this culture where everyone feels that, you know, you want to do the right thing, that you're part of that group, part of that community. I can tell you some, you know, having done this for over 25 years, if people, it's a weird analogy, but it works almost 100% of the time. If people start eating other people's lunches, they're stealing from you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's kind of like one of those catch, you know, my little secret sauce type. It'd be a weird thing. You wouldn't think about that. But when you start stealing from other employees, you've already been stealing from your employer. So we see that, you know, we see those kind of things a lot. But we do online training, we do Zoom training, we do in-person training. And again, it's amazing how many times people have said, I've never been given these tools, you know, which makes me not feel that I'm part of the team.
Right. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And yeah, I just wonder too, like we were saying, you know, are folks both on the retail and cultivation side just checking a box? Or are they looking at the health and wellness of their organization, even as it pertains to security?
Right.
Well, Tony, I don't want to take up much more of your time. I'm really excited that you are able to join me today on this conversation. If you don't know Tony Gallo and his organization, again, Sapphire Risk Advisory Group, you can find them online at sapphirerisk.com. As you know, as you probably learned on the podcast here, they've got decades and decades of experience. Sapphire is the most recognized and successful security consulting firm in the cannabis industry. Check them out. Find Tony on LinkedIn. He's got a lot of great stuff to say. Thank you, Tony, so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
You bet.
You've been listening to The Cult, the Cannabis Business Marketing and Culture Podcast, presented by Hybrid Marketing Co. Please visit hybridmarketingco.com for more resources or to connect with Jen and our team. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you again soon.